You are listening to Vueltas y Revueltas, the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España, powered by Super Sapiens, energy management for committed athletes and coaches. Stage 9. Today we are in Alto de Belefique.
Is Mass a bigger worry than Bernal now, Primoz?
At the moment, seems like, I didn't saw really the results yet, but like I said, it's still super long, and everything will go upside down for sure in the next 10 days, and at the end, after the time trial, we will know then who was actually the best.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Good evening, Richard.
And Daniele Fribrancini, or Daniel Fribarico, suggests Paul Hunt. We've had another suggestion as well. Daniel Fibra. That's Anders Hoffman on Twitter. So the suggestions are coming in for your Spanish alter ego.
I thought Fribos Man was better. Maybe if I was South American. Or if I rode for Bora.
Where are you, Fribarico?
Well, chaps, I am at the press room, just come down from the top of the Alto de Belefique, and the press room is about halfway down the mountain today, or actually a bit further than that, because it's just outside the little town village of Belefique, and in fact, just under my feet almost, because I'm sitting on a kind of balcony. I've seen the Ineos Grenadiers, little sort of people carrier go past with Egan Bernal in the front.
Just for carrying little people carrier. There's a metaphor there, is there, for Ineos under the feet of, I don't know. We heard Primoz Roglic at the start there talking about Enric Mas and whether he is now the rider he most fears at this Vuelta. It was a big shootout today, wasn't it? Much anticipated stage and lots of climbing and it revealed something, perhaps, that we haven't seen yet about how this Vuelta may go.
Bit of a humdinger, chaps?
I think so. Yeah, it was a bit of a humdinger. There weren't too many surprises, were there? And I guess it just confirmed that Roglic is certainly the man to beat. And for a while it looked as if, you know, barring victorious might be playing a bit of a blinder. But we'll get on to all that, won't we, as we discuss what happened. But I don't know, was that a humdinger, Lionel?
Yeah, I thought it was, actually. I thought there was a lot going on, wasn't there? So I'll try and simplify it in the tale of the etapa. Stage 9 to Alto de Belefique, 188 kilometres. And it took a long while for the break to really go, didn't it? There was a lot of attacking in the first 60, 70 kilometres. In fact, one of the very early attackers was Wout Poels of Bahrain Victoria, showing that they meant business, trying to get people up the road. And it was their rider, Damiano Caruso, who was second in the Giro earlier this season and who won a very memorable mountain stage on the final Saturday, which you chaps will remember well, who won the stage. He got into a move that went clear just under 100 kilometres to go and then went clear on his own with 71 kilometres still to the finish and built a sizeable lead. He was homing in on moving up the GC. He started the day over 6 minutes down the lead, got to sort of 4.5 or so over the Roglic group. But that got chiselled down, of course, as they got onto the very long final climb. Caruso was at one point being sort of chased by various groups. Romain Bardet was in the mix at one point. Geoffrey Bouchard was there at one point. But the Italian had more than enough time in hand and strength in the legs to hold on. And he was a minute clear of the GC battle that came behind him. A very impressive stage win for Caruso. And what about that GC race? Well, Ineos Grenadiers, or more to the point, Adam Yates, tried to turn the screw on Roglic with a series of attacks on the last climb. The first person to mark him was Movistar's Miguel Angel Lopez. Sepp Kuss was also very alert for Jumbo-Visma. Roglic held his nerve and then rode across, I thought, in really impressive style, around about a kilometre after Yates' first attack. And that sort of set up the finish. There was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. Mass stuck to Roglic like glue. Yates tried a couple more times to go again, but it did feel like with each attack that a little bit of sting was going out of Yates' potency. And the net result was that his teammate, Egan Bernal, was looking in difficulty. He was taking longer to stay on terms. And in fact, when one of the splits happened, he was sort of helped by the fact that they caught Geoffrey Bouchard, because he was almost a life raft for Bernal to kind of jump onto and then bridge across and stay in touch with the leaders. And then it really boiled down to Mass, Roglic and Yates, and then all of a sudden Yates wasn't there anymore, and so Roglic and Mass moved clear, and they are, on today's evidence, the strongest two riders in the race. And that means that Roglic is now obviously still in the red jersey, 28 seconds ahead of Enric Mass. Mass's teammate Miguel Angel Lopez of the Movistar team is at 121. Behind them, Jack Haig, very impressive again for Bahrain Victorious, and he is up to fourth place overall. Egan Bernal and Adam Yates move up on GC, but actually slip down in terms of the time gap to Roglic. And what else? Well, Felix Groschartner of Bora Hansgrohe, he didn't live up to my expectations that he might stay in the GC hunt. He slipped down from second to ninth overall. And Caruso is also in the King of the Mountains jersey, isn't he? Because he took maximum points at the top. Romain Bardet is second. And Pavel Sivakov, who did a lot of work for Ineos on the final climb, is now third in that competition. So shaping up nicely. Roglic versus Movistar. It looks like the Movistar threat is very potent, but they did lose Johan Jacobs today and are down to six men, and that might limit their options a bit. Who knows?
You are listening to Vueltas y Revueltas, the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España, powered by Super Sapiens, energy management for committed athletes and coaches. Still guessing on fueling? Not sure what or when to eat and drink on rides that matter? Never again. Optimize your fueling strategy with real-time glucose data, actionable insights, and personalized analytics. We're here to help you achieve your performance goals. Go to supersapiens.com for more on how to track your energy levels and fuel for success.
Thank you very much to Super Sapiens, the cycling podcast title sponsors. If you'd like to find out more about them, go to supersapiens.com. If you'd like to win a 3-month supply of the patches that stick on your arm and give a continuous glucose level to the Super Sapiens app, go to thecyclingpodcast.com and find out how you can enter and win 3 months access to Super Sapiens and see what it's all about for yourself. Now, we've been talking to Asker Jurkendrup, who is a sports scientist and nutritionist for the Jumbo Visma team, and the Super Sapiens app gives continuous glucose levels so you can see how your body is responding to the food that you eat and the exercise that you're doing. And a question we asked Asker is this: could two people eat the same meal and have a different glucose response?
I wouldn't say radically different, but quite different. For example, if we give you a lower glycemic index food, like a food that doesn't give a large insulin response and a large glucose response, and me and we then eat a high glycemic index food, then we would probably both have a higher response with a higher glycemic index food. But it could still be that you respond much more to these foods than I do. So the magnitude of change could be quite different between you and I. The general principles that we've learned over many years of research, they still apply, but the individual responses can still be quite different.
Well, I think in this episode, we're going to be talking quite a lot about teams, aren't we? Sort of four big teams: Jumbo-Visma, Bahrain Victorious, Movistar and Ineos Grenadiers. And there's lots to say about how all of them got on today, but the winners of the stage were Bahrain Victorious. In fact, you know, you spoke before the Vuelta, Daniel, about their incredible midfield, and their striker was going to be Mikel Landa. Landa is now the fourth best Bahrain Victorious rider on GC. So their options, their cards have been shuffled quite a lot, and Jack Haig at the moment looks to be the best place rider. You spoke to him at the start this morning, Daniel.
Yes, I did, Rich. We were intrigued to see what they were going to plan today. There was some talk that it wasn't the penultimate climb, it was three climbs from the end, the Collado de Venta Luisa, which was the hardest climb of the race, certainly in terms of, or the stage today, certainly in terms of gradient. There was some talk, some suggestion that they might be the team most likely to light it up there. That was one of the strategies they could have employed. There were other options as well. And yeah, I was keen to hear from Jack Haig about exactly what they were planning.
So I think I'm on less than a minute now, so I think if anyone lifts me up the road, it could be pretty dangerous. But there's a lot of other guys and other teams that are in similar situations. We have three guys that are looking for the break with Padun, Gino, and Damiano.
The hardest climb on the course today is the penultimate one, or the steepest anyway. It looks the perfect place for a team to take it on and be really aggressive there. You could be the team, couldn't you, with the number of strong climbers that you've got?
No, absolutely. I think we have that penultimate climb, like you said, and then there's also this middle section with a very short climb. It's the smallest road we have all day. It's quite twisty, and I think you can really put some people under pressure here, and it'll probably really depend on the breakaway composition as to who will take it up.
Well, chaps, Jack Haig's crystal ball proved to be more accurate than one of our podcasts, didn't it? At least 60%, because he pretty accurately foretold events there by mentioning the fact that the team, Bahrain Victorious, probably wanted to get someone in a break. That sounded like option A, plan A. Plan A turned out to be Damiano Caruso, who has kept a pretty low profile so far in this Vuelta a España, because, as you say, Rich, he's sort of surrounded, submerged in this very deep midfield that they've got. They've got several very strong climbers who are all going fairly well, it seems. And yeah, Caruso had passed pretty much unnoticed, but he was the ideal man. So that was one of the talking points, certainly this morning in Puerto Lumbreras. One other thing that was a hot topic of discussion was, well, it was going to be the tactical battle between Ineos Grenadiers and Jumbo Visma. There've been murmurs over the last few days about how strong Jumbo Visma have not looked, that they've looked a little bit porous. Stephen Kreiswijk, well, I spoke to him this morning, and he was quite open about the fact that he's not going too well. Sepp Kuss has been a little bit fitful at times, and I think Egan Bernal and Ineos had smelled a bit of blood in the water, certainly after the other day's stage at Balcon de Alicante. And in fact, our audio diarist Pavel Sivakov sort of confirmed that to me this morning.
Oh, we saw it actually. I was in the front, but then I heard from the guys that the last mountain stage, the one that finished in Balcon de Alicante, was sure that Jumbo were a bit under pressure there. We had Sepp in the front, but behind he was a bit isolated when Valverde went. And unfortunately, I think the race could have been differently in terms of GC. If Valverde would have stayed upright, I think I would have dropped down, and Carlos Verona would have dropped down from the breakaway. So, I think could have been some gaps there. So, definitely, I think the two, like us and Movistar, will try to look for an opportunity to isolate Roglic.
It's very interesting to think about Bahrain and Ineos and their respective tactics, because Caruso said at the start that he was thinking about the stage win. You know, he wasn't too far. Has he been in a holding role in this Vuelta so far? I don't know, but if we're using sort of football analogies, but he wasn't too far down overall. And there was a moment today where it looked like he was, you know, doing what Jack Haig did the other day and propelling himself right back up on GC to give them another option there. But it all hinges on how well your leader's going. And as I mentioned earlier, Landa has slipped down. I mean, Landa could be the guy to go in breakaways now. You know, he's almost 6 minutes down on GC, not really a threat anymore. They've still got lots of bodies up there. Gino Mader's the other one who's still up there. But Bahrain Victorious don't seem to be riding as if they're trying to win this Vuelta, whereas Ineos Grenadiers do seem to be, have at least until now, seem to be riding to try and win the Vuelta. But I think we can ask a lot of questions about their tactics today, because if they smelled weakness in Jumbo Visma, I didn't really understand why they were riding the way that they were. Tom Pidcock was very visible, making things quite hard. They had the whole team on the front, riding as if they had the red jersey, and did seem to my untrained eye to be doing Jumbo Visma's job for them. You know, with Caruso up the road and gaining a lot of time, that was a kind of sticky moment for Jumbo Visma, and they should have been the team chasing it, I thought. And that might have isolated Roglic a bit earlier. Not that I think it would have mattered in the end, because Roglic is, you know, almost doesn't need the team support when it, you know, on the final mountain. But it was an odd tactic, I thought. I didn't really understand it, and it obviously backfired in the end because Bernal didn't have the legs in the end, and Yates didn't have the legs either to go with Roglic and Mass.
No, it's a very thin line, this, isn't it, between putting pressure on the overall leader and his team and doing their work for them. And yeah, it's the result sheet at the end of the day determines how we evaluate all of that work. I mean, they were clearly trying to make it hard to set up some kind of move. I think they'd perhaps be a little bit disappointed with Richard Carapaz, who, you know, couldn't really contribute. You know, they didn't really have the sort of the second rider to at least help Bernal when he was struggling, you know, be around Bernal when Adam Yates was putting on the pressure. But I mean, it was conventional enough stuff from them, really, wasn't it? The second best placed rider on the general classification, Adam Yates, trying to stretch things, trying to put Roglic under pressure with the assumption that Bernal can just follow wheels behind and just sit tight and maybe counterattack or capitalise a bit later on if there are any chinks in Roglic's armour. But the big problem, as you always say, Rich, is if the leader in the race doesn't falter, doesn't crack, and is looking like, you know, by not some distance the strongest, because I think Mass is pretty close to him, but those two are a little bit better than everybody else at the moment, and the difficulty is that you've got to crack the leader, and it is quite hard to see how they're going to do that. Ineos now with Bernal 152 down and Yates 207 down. Movistar have a much better chance of that with having Mass and Lopez both within 121, and Mass, of course, you know, within 30 seconds makes him a real danger. But yeah, it's I thought it was kind of, you know, tactical handbook page one, really, from Ineos. They were trying to make it hard, send Yates up the road, and then see what happens. And had Bernal been better, we could have been, you know, looking at a very different picture. You know, Bernal might have put a bit of pressure on Roglic, but again, you don't know how good the legs are going to be until, you know, push comes to shove, do you? You know, they wouldn't have done that thinking, oh, well, we'll crack our own man. That wasn't what they were trying to do. It's impossible to know until the crunch comes.
Do you think, chaps, you talked there, Lionel, about making it hard. Do you think in their rose-tinted crystal ball, the scenario they foresaw was maybe on that third to last climb, the Collada de Venta Luisa, that Sam Omen wasn't there? They'd got rid of him. Kreiswijk, maybe even they'd got rid of him. Possibly even Sepp Kuss, certainly Kern Bauman, and Roglic was left with possibly only one of the teammate, maybe Kuss. And they, at that point, would have Carapaz, Yates and Bernal. I mean, Carapaz, who has lost time on several stages, but he's still, you know, he was still only 2 or 3 minutes down this morning. Still a danger, still someone that Jumbo-Visma would want to follow. Do you think that was their sort of Pollyanna scenario, the Goldilocks scenario that they envisaged?
I guess it would have been, certainly to isolate Roglic well before the final climb. But it depends, doesn't it, on having three riders there that you mentioned, two or three riders who are you know, almost the equal of Roglic. And it's clear that Roglic is just much better. You know, when he had to make an effort today to bridge a gap that looked a bit dangerous, I think it was Adam Yates and Lopez at that point, and Roglic just motored across. There was no, you know, when he had to do that, he did it. He does look to be by far the best rider in the race, and that makes it obviously very difficult for any other rider or team to take him on. It's very difficult, isn't it? I mean, but it was a curious looking tactic, and they did stop, you know, when they realised, I think, that it wasn't having the desired effect, that Roglic did still have his teammates around him.
I guess the other talking point, chaps, is the timing of Yates's attacks, and well, we don't know what messages were being exchanged at that point, and we have sort of imagined that there might be difficulty in communication with this three leader strategy. We said it already at the Tour de France that this might be one peril of going into the Tour with that strategy. And in fact, after the finish this afternoon, I did sort of prod Sepp Kuss on that, because he was there with the Ineos riders, and this is what he said.
I think they had to try something for sure, but I mean, from our side, we were
we were really strong. We had a lot of guys left in the group. We just did our own race, and then as for Ineos, it's sometimes hard to communicate amongst the if you have multiple leaders. You know, if one's feeling really good and the other is not so much, then that can sometimes clash a little bit.
I mean, to be fair to Ineos, I thought Adam Yates looked really, really good. I mean, perhaps that's the bias of the fact that he is a dynamic looking rider on climbs like that. He's out of the saddle. He looks pretty good, and he had people stretched out behind him a bit. And for a while, I thought if he can perhaps go again, he might, you know, the next one might be the one that would force the cracks to open up a bit. But unfortunately for him, Roglic and Mas just moved away from him, and he couldn't hold the wheel, and that was probably paying the price for the number of attacks in relatively quick succession. But I think, Daniel, I mean, you tell me about the climb. I mean, it seemed to me that it kind of eased up a bit from that point on, and that's when, you know, Yates was trying to make something happen on the bit of the climb that suited him and suits his style best. And you know, again, without having driven the climb and seen it close up, I mean, Roglic looked like he was just making that effort at the point that he thought, right, it doesn't want to get it out of hand. And Richard, your phrase motored across will get the conspiracy theorists and the tinfoil hat wearers twitching. But I mean, it was really, really impressive. It's the most impressive moment of the Vuelta so far, I thought. And watching that back, if any of his rivals do, you would think, well, what can we do to isolate him? I mean, isolating him's not going to work, is it, on this form? It doesn't make won't make any difference. He'll just ride across gaps.
Yes, Lionel, it's a funny climb. I mean, first of all, first thing to say, which I'm sure you saw on TV, it's in a fascinating part of Spain in terms of the landscape. We talked about all the spaghetti westerns that have been filmed here, but it really is, well, I wouldn't say lunar, but it is quite otherworldly. This climb and its sort of next door neighbour, the Calar Alto, which has been quite a famous climb in the Vuelta a España. And well, you saw the zigzags, the hairpins from the helicopter shots, and we were slightly, well, we kind of anticipated a lot of riders coming in after the finish and saying that the wind had played a big role, because it was whipping around, and there were at different points in the afternoon it was very strong, and then it calmed down. But Sepp Kuss, for example, said the wind wasn't really that much of a factor. But as you say, Lionel, there are sections on this climb. There are certain hairpins where it does flatten out and you can pick up speed. Other sections where you could kind of see on TV that they were really reduced to a bit of a crawl. But what did you make of Roglic's, well, after he went across to Mass and after he really... well, made that move, which I suppose determined the outcome of the stage from a GC point of view. Were you guys surprised that he didn't try to twist the knife there, or that he couldn't twist the knife? It looked at that point as though he had certainly more power than anyone else on the mountain, but he, you know, essentially rode in with Mass and then, well, Julie Roglified him on the line and got the obligatory six bonus seconds. But yeah, part of me thinks that he possibly could have forced the issue a little bit more.
I don't think we're going to hear it, but your interview with Stephen Kreiswick at the start was quite interesting, because you asked him whether they as a team were riding a bit more conservatively. And, you know, he's won the Vuelta twice. And as you say, Daniel, he has tended to dip a little in the final week. And it could be that they're using this Vuelta to try and do it a bit differently, because it did look to me like he obviously had a lot in the tank. When I said he motored across, I didn't mean that he literally motored across. No, it was no. Just a turn of phrase. He seemed, I don't know whether he was capable of turning the knife or accelerating or turning his motor back on when he was with Mass, but he seemed content to ride in with him until the Roglification just before the line. And Mass likewise was content to ride with Roglic, because it was kind of in their interest. You know, I said the other day that I felt that Superman riding with Roglic, with Mass having been dropped the other day, was perhaps not the best use of his resources. But the two of them were away. Roglic is clearly the strongest rider in the race. Mass was riding up to second overall. He's only 28 seconds down. He's still very much in it. and it was a good opportunity for him today to get a bit of time on other riders and worry about Roglic later. But it could be that Roglic and his team are almost experimenting a little bit this Vuelta. I don't know. To try and see if by conserving a little bit and not making all these big efforts throughout the race and throughout the first couple of weeks, whether it leaves him with a little bit more in the tank at the end of the race.
Rich, should we hear a bit of old Rog and let our listeners do a bit of psychoanalysis of their own?
Yeah, it was definitely a full gas of racing through the whole day. Super hard stage, hard climb. I'm happy I'm now on the top and looking forward for the rest day for tomorrow. It was quite an action all the time. It was hard and just luckily I had the legs that I could be here with the best climbers.
What do you think about those Ineos tactics? One after another, Yates was going and going.
For sure, they are not comfortable because for me we can go more easy. it's not like that. And it was full gas of racing. And like I said, luckily I had it that I could be there.
Were you surprised that Bernal, Lopez, and Carapaz stayed behind, that they couldn't stay with you?
Yeah, it's racing. Sometimes you win something, sometimes you lose something. And today we gained something.
Science in Sport is supporting the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thanks very much indeed to Science in Sport, our sponsor since 2016, the Giro d'Italia. In 2016, they began their association with the cycling podcast, and it continues to this day, and we're very grateful to them for their support. If you would like 25% off your Science in Sport products, go to scienceinsport.com. And at the checkout, enter the code SISCP25. SISCP25. Somebody who seemed perfectly fueled today was Damiano Caruso, who went clear from a pretty strong break. There were some good riders in that group. Continued a trend that we've seen in the recent couple of seasons of riders really taking on from a long way out. 70-odd kilometres he went away on his own and never looked back. I mean, the lead went out to a minute, and then it went, when Ineos Grenadiers stopped their work on the front of the bunch, it began to go out to 4 or 5 minutes, and at one point it looked like he might be riding into a very high position on GC. But regardless of the fact that he didn't move up as much on GC as it looked at one point he might do, he's up to 15th overall. It was a phenomenal ride and a great victory, wasn't it?
Well, Rich, I was just going to say, you said perfectly fueled. I mean, was he fueled on spaghetti? I did think after your little nugget in yesterday's episode about this region being famous for hosting the spaghetti western films. I didn't know this, that it was that name is because the directors were Italian. Did a bit of reading about that. I mean, Caruso really, it was lights, camera, action from him today, wasn't he?
He's Italian, so he's probably always fueled on pasta.
Well, but he was the Sergio Leone of the final climb, without a doubt. Yeah. I mean, it was a very, very well scripted and very well performed move by him, wasn't it? Impressive.
Guys, I talked earlier about Ineos smelling blood and with relation to Jumbo-Visma, but it was interesting just in the sort of timing of Caruso's effort in that breakaway. To me, it looked as though he timed his move perfectly, and it came at the crucial moment because the bunch behind was smelling blood and it looked as though they were going to close on the breakaway in quite short order, but he then decided to make the move and the gap went out again pretty quickly. But it just underlined as well how the timing of efforts within a breakaway is very important. It's not just about how many watts you produce over the course of the day, it's when you produce them. And sort of dangling bait and then snatching it away when the big sort of scary beast behind starts to snap and starts to bite, and that's what Caruso did today with great aplomb. He also spoke with great aplomb in his post-race interview in English. I didn't know he spoke English. He did a nice round of interviews. So we're going to hear from him, I think, Damiano Caruso, and thereafter from his director sportif, Goraj Stangli, who, well, discussed and touched on a bittersweet day for Bahrain Victorious, mainly sweet because Caruso won the stage and Jack Haig moved up on general classification, but bitter in the sense that Mikel Landa, who was their leader coming into this Vuelta a España, has really fallen out of contention.
It's an amazing feeling after the Giro. My goal was come here for Mikel and for the GC and try to take one victory. The first goal was I had already a good victory, and then I'm so happy, but I feel sorry also for Mikel. But that's the cyclist, you know. And now we have Jack Haig. He's still riding good, so from Monday we start with another race.
Yeah, let's say that these are the days when in one point I was enjoying seeing Damiano in front winning and suffering a bit, seeing suffering Mikel. But let's say actually that from this morning he complained a bit. He didn't have the best feelings. So we decided already and mentioned a few guys to watch out on him, because he's still a champion. He's still our, let's say, one of best riders, and we still want to support him as we did till the end when he was dropped with Wout Poels and Marc Padoen. Yeah, Damiano, what to say? Let's say that we plan to have one rider in front. It's not easy, as he explained, to catch the break. He was actually, let's say, had the legs to go, plus a bit of lucky. Put it together, but from the peloton they didn't left him much space. I think he really reacted very well when he decided to went away alone to gain time in the middle part of the stage, because normally on the last climb battle of GC riders then bring this gap back, and he did everything perfect and of course he had really good legs today to be able to do it. And this is just the first block of this Vuelta. The hardest days are still coming. Jack showed from the beginning good condition. We are more looking day by day, you know, in front, and we already got one objective. We won the stage today with Damiano. We are fighting with Jack, with Gino, and with Mikel also for the more objectives from the rest day later. So yeah, let's look forward day by day, and let's say that we have positive thinking and in these guys.
Jack attacked. It was his attack that really finished Bernal off, or Bernal really got dropped after that. Was that an order from you, or was that something that Jack decided to do himself?
Yeah, it's difficult to take these decisions because from the car it's also difficult to know how guys are feeling. But let's say that Jack was in good position because Damiano in front, he has good legs. Other guys had a battle and he just controlled the situation. And let's say that finale, last 5 k's of climb fit to him because it's less steep. And he made good decision to try the legs. And once he saw that Bernal was dropped, he just continued. It was not his goal to drop him. His goal was more to limit the gap between Roglic and Lopez in front, or Mas in front, sorry.
I've spoken about Ineos Grenadiers, Jumbo Visma, and the fact Roglic is the strongest in the race. But the two other teams who are in an interesting position now, certainly Movistar with Mas and Lopez second and third, and still really in the fight. It's a great shame that Alejandro Valverde crashed out the other day, because, you know, he could have perhaps had a part to play on that final climb and helped make Roglic's life a little bit more difficult. Perhaps, who knows, we'll never know. But Jack Haig as well. I mean, you know, I was curious to see what he would do at this race because he made a fantastic start at the Tour de France, crashed out on stage three, didn't race between the Tour and the Vuelta, and I think came into this race really uncertain of his own condition. Didn't have the easiest of starts, but then got in that big breakaway the other day and moved right back up in GC. And he was the only rider who did that, who backed it up today and looked better than he's looked at any point so far in this Vuelta, which must be enormously encouraging for him. He's up to fourth overall and has a real shot at aiming for the podium at least. You know, he's presumably now the leader of that team. They've still got lots of cards to play, in fact, up there. So could still have a major impact on the race, and Haig might be a rider who gets better as the race goes on.
Well, yeah, you mentioned Movistar there and what they will do and the absence of Valverde, so it's just Mas and Lopez. I say just Mas and Lopez. I mean, that's a pretty handy pair of riders to have. Both have experience at the top end of GC, deep into Grand Tours. But Mas has now got the upper hand. He's shown that he is the strongest. And I just wonder whether, you know, that was all about timing, really, wasn't it? Because Lopez reacted first today. Mas reacted best. But what do they do now? How do they turn the screw on Primoz Roglic? I mean, it's the big question that they'll be asking themselves. And it's not speculative to look ahead at the remaining mountain stages and ponder what they can do. Because, in a way, Lopez is just that little bit too close to really be that perfect foil. He's not going to be allowed any more leeway or movement than Mas is. And I suppose the job will be to try to isolate Roglic so that they can hit him 1-2. And hopefully, if it's just those two against Roglic and there's no Sepp Kuss lurking around to close gaps and help out, you know, that's got to be their best chance, hasn't it?
I think, chaps, they just need to bide their time, really. And I think Roglic, although he has a decent advantage, and even today after the stage he was talking about the final time trial, it's much, much too close for comfort. And it's not only the Movistar rider Tour too close for comfort, it's also the likes of Jack Haig and even going further down general classification. And I think, you know, they will give him, Movistar will give him the heebie-jeebies if Mas and Superman remain as close as they currently are. There's so much more climbing to come, even down to, well, if we look ahead to the penultimate day in Galicia, which is not one of the big mountain stages that's been flagged up, but it's up and down all day. And, you know, we've seen Movistar try, sometimes fail, sometimes succeed in sort of staging ambushes on days like that in the past. And I think, you know, if they get to the second rest day in a similar position to what they're in now, they'll be absolutely delighted. And I don't think Primoz Roglic should be particularly comfortable in that position. I think they are riding really well. Mas is in the form of his life. He's also, you know, in a great mood. He's not someone who's particularly enjoys media duties and so on, but he was very chipper tonight when he came into the mix zone. The only sour note for them today was that they've lost another rider, Johan Jacobs, who I talked about a bit in the first week. He was mainly here to patrol the GC department in his team on the flat days, but he abandoned today, so they're a couple of men down, which won't help. I think Carlos Verona is riding really well. He finished pretty high up today. He's not, you know, one of the top 10 or 15 climbers ordinarily in the Vuelta, but I think he was inside the top 20 today, and we saw the other day he was really strong as well. So that counts as well, just the form that the guys you do have are in.
Yeah, he looks to be in great form, actually, and is a real asset for them, potentially. I mean, you look at last year, and remember, Roglic had quite, you know, it's all relative with Roglic, but he had quite a tough time on the Angry Lou, mate. And he was, you know, 26 seconds down on Carthy, 10 seconds down on Mas, you know, and if he has a little wobble, like he had on the Angry Lou, to give it its proper name, on that occasion, you know, Mas was able to take some time, and on a tough climb like that, Mas could certainly be there. So could Lopez. It's a very dangerous situation for Roglic at the moment in that respect. I mean, Mas and Lopez both look to be riding really, really well, and while they're there, it's a threat.
And Rich, today didn't really allay all doubts. We sort of started the episode today talking about Ineos's feelings that Jumbo-Visma weren't as strong as they maybe have been in the past, or they maybe should be. And Sepkus, I don't think, is in his absolutely best form. I think his GC position at the moment is relatively misleading. He's still in the top 10, but and you know, they'll be saying, Jumbo-Visma will be saying, well, we've got two cards as well. But I think I would rather have a Superman Lopez in terms of providing a real threat on the GC than Sepkus at the moment.
I wonder, just one factor, Roglic only did a week of the Tour de France, didn't he? Of course, pulling out when they got to his home stage in Tien. Mas finished sixth in the Tour. Lopez pulled out a couple of days from the end of the Tour, but has ridden, you know, most of a three-week race already. You know, conventional wisdom would say, well, Roglic is fresh, and maybe that will be the thing that means that he doesn't have the late stage wobbles that we have seen from him in the past. Because Richard, as you mentioned there, you know, it wasn't just on the Angry Lou, was it? He was under a lot of pressure from Carapaz right to the very end of the Vuelta last year, which of course, you know, was at the end of a really strange period of racing. It was only 18 days. You know, those 3 days might not make much difference, but you know, very different circumstances. But I do think of the top three at the moment, you know, Roglic is, you know, he shouldn't be sort of as fatigued at that sort of, you know, deep level, having had a relatively light summer.
Indeed. Well, it's still all to play for. It's a rest day tomorrow, and we're actually giving you the day off, Daniel. We normally do a press conference on rest days. We're not doing that on this rest day. We will do that next rest day, for the second rest day, when I'll be back out in Spain. We'll do that. We are releasing an episode tomorrow. Well, we're releasing two episodes tomorrow.
We can release three, Rich, because I've got a Kilometre Zero.
All right, okay. Well, it'd be unusual to release two episodes of Kilometre Zero on the same day. But we will release the latest installment of our audio diaries tomorrow as Kilometre Zero. And there'll be the August episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina, including an interview with the Olympic road race champion Anna Kiesenhofer, who I interviewed last week. And I found it absolutely fascinating. She's a really interesting character. And that is out tomorrow. We're gonna be delivering more Kilometre Zeros than originally advertised as well. We've got some additional episodes, so lots to come up.
What have we had so far? We've had the Slovenians, we've had Mark Padun, I've got Fabio Aru coming.
The audio diaries, we've got Fabio Aru coming, we've got Scott Thwaites one coming as well. Lots to come as we get into the second week of the Vuelta. Well, just before we go tonight, let's hear the latest from our audio diarist, James Knox, one of three audio diarists, of course, along with Pavel Sivikov and John Bowe. You'll hear more from all of them in tomorrow's episode of Kilometre Zero. But James, certainly ready for the rest day. Let's hear how he got on stage 9.
Well, made it to the rest day, which is very, very appreciated. I am in bed, pretty destroyed right now. Yeah, today was really, really hard, and I didn't do anything. Scary, in fact. I had no ambition. I rode yesterday. Sort of given the green light just to, can't say take the day off, because that was kind of impossible, but just to not worry about the break. Quite clear I didn't have the legs as of yet. Well, let's hope that changes, to do anything on a brutal day like today. So floated about. The first hour was very fast, and then it sort of started going up and down. And then some crashes, really dusty, slippery. South of Spain roads, there's a little bridge before a town, maybe about an hour and a half in. And Andrea crashed, and he crashed pretty hard. I wasn't far behind him, but I grabbed some brake also and felt my back wheel sliding. I just managed to sort of slide my way through unscathed, but that caused a big split. This is all before like the first KOM, so that really sort of kicked it off, to be honest, because it was already full noise for a while at this point, people trying to get in the break. And yeah, and they still went hard, and a lot of the big favourites had to sort of chase very hard to get back to the front. I didn't get back to the front and ended up in a group out the arse quite early on there. Different guys did some big burners, getting very ambitious to get back to the front, but in the end we got over the first climb of the day. And some of the guys, most notably Lotto, Jumbo Visma, Ineos, Movistar, guys in the back who needed to be in the front to help the teammates. Just pulled on the valley and we all came back. But we all came back, and then we started that long 30 kilometer. I'm not sure what the name of that one was for. I was just seeing signs all day for Velafik or whatever it was, you know, big mountains out of Almeria. And yeah, I felt better at that moment. You know, I got back in, still very hot, but no stress. Ineos turned the gas on, hung in for a little bit. Didn't want to kill myself, so just, yeah, when it was starting, I just get all strung out, called it a day, dropped backwards, found a bit of a group, kept riding. The day was so hard that we were just slogging away on climbs all day, sweating, hot, grabbing bottles from the side of the road, pouring water over my head. And just that frustrating situation of being out the arse of the race and then guys still plugging away a bit harder than you want them to. So yeah, just felt like I was groveling, just hurting all day, just cowing down the kilometers to the finish, but it's taking forever. A couple of fast, tricky descents, an extra little climb, and then the last one to the line. Yeah, I was in a world of pain, to be honest. So, yeah, a little bit demoralized, you know, gotta say. Just surviving today was hard enough, so that doesn't paint a very pretty picture, does it, when all I did was survive and I still had a hard day. Thankfully, it's a rest day tomorrow. Had a little beer on the bus, so I'm a little bit woozy now. I went straight to my head, probably a bit dehydrated. Maybe wasn't the smartest idea, but everyone else was doing it, so I thought I'd join in. Now I'm on the bed, just feeling ready to sleep, to be honest. So take it easy tonight. Hopefully get some good sleep in. Roll around tomorrow for 45 minutes. Sit by the pool for a little bit, and there's not much else to do. Keep you updated. See how we get on.
Where are you staying tonight, Daniel?
I am staying in Almeria, which will be, well, it's a town that I'm not particularly familiar with. We're staying right in the middle of town. So hopefully, well, there'll be some sightseeing tomorrow. Something we don't usually do when we're on major tours. Well, I'll probably head for the hills as well, Rich, as you know. I like to rewild on rest days.
Rewild on rest days. Go foraging.
You're not going to pop round to Roquetas de Mar and, I don't know, help out, you know, maybe pick some tomatoes from the greenhouses.
I must say, Lionel, when we visited Roquetas de Mar 3 or 4 years ago, didn't leave a particularly good impression on me. There was the option of staying there for the rest day, and I've chosen to go to Almeria instead.
Well, enjoy, and we'll hook up with you again on Tuesday as the Vuelta gets underway again. In the meantime, have a good evening, Daniel.
Thanks, chaps. Likewise.
Thanks, Lionel.
Cheers, guys.